number 615 to Shannon, Ireland and London, England. Les passagers à destination de Shannon, Irlande.
This is Montreal, bilingual cosmopolitan city of Canada. We are in the aviation building, headquarters of the International Civil Aviation Organization. Outside, limousines are departing to take passengers to the Dorval Airport. We walk into the main lobby off Dorchester Street and see ticket offices of a number of the world's leading airlines.
This is the last announcement for passengers for Shannon, Ireland, and London, England. The limousines are leaving for
reservations. Yes, madam, that flight is on time. That's right. You'll be notified if there's any delay. Mm-hmm. Yes. One moment, please. May I help you, sir?
Is this the headquarters of the International Civil Aviation Organization?
Not here, sir. Upstairs, 5th to 10th floors inclusive. Elevators are at the end of the corridor. Yes, madam. 66 pounds of luggage are permitted on all overseas first-class flights. You're welcome. Reservations? Just one moment, I'll switch your call.
I want...
Yes, sir. Is there something else?
Can you tell me, where do their international flights go?
Whose?
The International Civil Aviation Organization's.
Oh, they don't fly planes.
I don't understand. I was told there was a Chicago convention,
Chicago convention? Perhaps you'd better go upstairs and find out. Would you mind? Reservations? Oui, madame. Cercle-lec. Bienvenue. Edith, if I get asked about that International Civil Aviation Organization once a day, I get asked 100 times. And I don't have all the answers.
Well, who does?
I'm going to find out right now what they do, even if it takes all my lunch hour.
If you can find out anything, I'd like to know it too.
The International Civil Aviation Organization presents The Freedom of the Skies, a program commemorating the 10th anniversary of the signing of the Convention on International Aviation. The Freedom of the Skies.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am the Secretary General of the International Civil Aviation Organization, and my name is Carl Jungberg. The International Civil Aviation Organization, or ICAO, is a non-commercial organization grouping 65 sovereign states, which handles at a governmental level the technical, economic, and legal problems of international aviation by setting the international rules of the air. It is my pleasure to introduce this program to you as a token of commemoration of what to us was a very important event, the signing of the Convention on International Civil Aviation in Chicago 10 years ago.
My job is selling airline tickets downstairs, and every day I get asked questions about the International Civil Aviation Organization, and I feel so stupid. Of course, I have an idea of what it does, but I feel I should know much more.
I think we can help you.
And what's all this about a Chicago conference?
That's where the International Civil Aviation Organization began, 10 years ago.
Oh, and what's the convention in Chicago?
Oh, well, by convention, we mean an international agreement. Such an agreement was signed in Chicago 10 years ago by a large number of countries interested in the future of civil aviation.
I see.
Look at that poster over there on the wall.
Preamble to the Convention on International Civil Aviation, Chicago, 1944.
Read it.
Whereas the future development of international civil aviation can greatly help to create and preserve friendship and understanding among the nations and peoples of the world.
International Civil Aviation is doing that and much more. Spinning a network of airways around the globe, it's conquered both natural and man-made barriers, crossed boundary lines of race and custom, of laws and language and prejudices, too. It's met the challenge of time and space, and met it over the last 8 years through the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, ICAO. ICAO speaks for 65 of the nations of the world. Of the many words to describe the concept behind the Chicago conference, one of the most fitting would be vision. Yes, vision is the word for those far-sighted men of many nations at Chicago. They handed over to the peoples of the world the assurance that with freedom from want and from fear would go the freedom of the skies. Let's turn back the clock 10 years to November 1944. And let's turn back our radio dials, too.
Weekend football scores. Notre Dame 13, Illinois 7. Navy 26, Penn nothing.
Present a medley from the Broadway hit, Oklahoma.
Army 27, Duke 7. We take you now to Chicago.
We're speaking to you from the Stevens Hotel in Chicago this November 1st on the occasion of the opening of the Conference on International Civil Aviation. This international meeting is being hailed in aviation circles throughout the Allied nations as the preparation for the rebirth of international
civil November aviation. 1944. It was a world of war headlines, of important military events dominating the universal scene. Perhaps you didn't hear too much about that conference at the time. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President of the United States of America, took the time to write this message.
As we begin to write a new chapter in the fundamental law of the air, let us all remember that we are engaged in a great attempt to build enduring institutions of peace. Air transport will be the first available means by which we can start to heal the wounds of war and put the world once more on a peacetime basis. In the past, the struggle for the freedom of the seas has led directly to a number of wars both in the eastern and western hemispheres. We do not need to make that mistake again. I know you will see to it that the air, which God gave to everyone, shall not become the means of domination over anyone. Let us therefore work together so that the air may be used by humanity to serve humanity.
And the views of President Roosevelt were shared by many. The conference was opened by U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Adolph A. Burley.
The chair will recognize the chairman of the delegation from Belgium, Monsieur le Vicomte Alain Dupart.
I am sure that I voice the feelings of all the delegations gathered here today when I say how grateful we are for the initiative taken by the government of the United States in convening
the... The chairman of the delegation from China.
The air has been used as a medium of aggression, and it is our purpose hereafter to make it a highway serving all peoples of the earth. Fortunately, aviation is a young art, and therefore more subject to the influence.
Among the delegations affirming their faith in the ability of men to use a powerful weapon as an instrument of friendship are some whose countries have suffered from the effects of aviation at war.
Monsieur Max Himons, chairman of the French delegation.
During the course of our voyage by air to the United States, more than one of us thought about these planes that had parachuted men and weapons into France, of those more daring still which landed to pick up and spirit away French patriots and Allied intelligence agents. Messieurs, this is the first time that France has participated in an international conference since 1940 with the full authority which goes with the recognition.
The chairman of the delegation of Mexico.
Aviation has won the war, and now it must win the peace. In our hands is placed the future of one of the conquests which does honor to humanity and on which depends the health, prosperity, and greatness of our respective countries.
Now I'm beginning to understand about the Chicago Convention.
Good.
But airplanes have been flying ever since the Wright brothers. When was all this organized?
In Paris, in 1905, just 2 years after the Wright brothers lifted their kite off the beach at Kitty Hawk.
Uh-huh.
A small organization was formed in Europe on French and Belgian initiative to deal with l'aviation sportive.
Oh, yes, private flying. Oh, I'm sorry, please go on.
Well, this organization was called the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale, and was extremely active in Europe in coordinating, to some extent, the still-marveled-at sport of aviation. The war clouds of 1914 darkened the skies of Europe. From then on, the airplane was employed by man to destroy his fellow man.
Airplanes? Well, yes, I suppose we could use them to spot the artillery, a sort of sky observation platforms, artillery spotters, you know. But it's a much too precarious form of transport to be effective.
In spite of such predictions, the First World War disproved the restricted future envisaged for the airplane by the Colonel Blimps. And when the victory bells chimed throughout the Allied capitals, where was that artillery spotter now? The post-war period was echoing with the exploits of the wartime airplane, and equally quick to sing the praises of what was to be expected from its peacetime counterpart.
Het vliegtuig is een prachtige uitvinding. L'avenir? Mais mon cher, c'est indiscutablement dans l'aviation.
El avión, una revolución en el transporte.
Das Flugzeug, wunderbar.
L'aeroplano è bello, come un uccello.
No doubt about it. The aeroplane's definitely the thing. I always said so.
Yes, the airplane was a wonderful invention.
I always said so.
And among those who realized the important role that the airplane was destined to play in the new post-war era was a young French Air Force captain, Albert Roper. In 1919, Roper had a dream, a vision of international peacetime aviation. He made a plan, and he showed it to France's veteran premier, Georges Clemenceau.
Capitaine Roper, j'ai soumis votre projet à la commission aéronautique de la conférence.
Captain Roper, I have submitted your plan to the Aeronautical Commission of the Versailles Peace Conference. They were immediately impressed with your plan. Full of vision.
Excellent.
Very good.
Une organisation pour régir les divers plans nationaux présentés à travers le monde.
An organization to regulate the many national aviation projects which are already blossoming throughout the world, so that through an exchange of ideas, aviation could grow up with an international background and in an atmosphere of cooperation. Yes, very good. Albert Roper's dream, the International Commission for Air Navigation, became a reality. And from its Paris headquarters for the next 20 years, countries worked together in the peaceful promotion of aviation. Meanwhile, in 1928, another aviation conference was held in Havana. There, 11 republics of the New World ratified the Pan-American Convention on Commercial Aviation. That convention defined broad principles of air transport, but it made no attempt to set up technical standards or to provide for any continuity through a permanent organization.
Excuse me, I don't think I quite follow. What did all this have to do with the meeting in Chicago?
Well, there was the war.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, during the war, for military reasons, aviation was developed so greatly that the organization which Ropert founded was outdistanced.
I see.
And so, in Chicago in 1944, it had to be brought up to date. But this time, it had to be a lot bigger. Because for every plane that crossed a mere continent before the war, hundreds now span the globe.
Well, did everyone realize what you've been telling me? I mean, the fact that the world was getting smaller and...
Well, the future of aviation got a lot of different reactions in 1944, but even then, there was one point upon which no one disagreed. Civil aviation was going to need some central authority set up by the nations of the world. This made sense to everyone.
We in Holland are an old maritime nation and used to trading with people in the far corners of the earth. Our airline has been operating since 1919 and is one of the keys to our national economy. All the countries of the world must work together to make aviation safe and of practical international value.
Well, Canadians certainly have a lot to thank aviation for. When 39 came along, our whole north country was relying on air supplies. We've even got the Mounties flying since those days, and that's a real sign that aviation's changing our face. This idea of getting everybody together so that every country will have the same chance for aviation to help it seems pretty good to me.
At no time did we British realize more that aviation was an invaluable link with the outside world than during the dark days of 1940. With an organization to guarantee that in the future aviation will be peaceful and competition equitable, we are sure there will be a place for all.
Australia and New Zealand have both publicly declared that in the interests of the future peace of the world and in order to facilitate the rational development of the world's air commerce, an international air transport authority should be appointed.
El Salvador is a small country, but aviation could be extremely useful in helping it. When aviation expands, as it surely will do within the next few years, we want to be equipped to be able to use it profitably.
In fact, all those countries attending Chicago had the vision to see that the conference and its purposes to create an international organization would develop a healthy, competitive aviation. And healthy and competitive it certainly was. Surely aviation's trends were foreseen at the conference. But how many could foresee that 10 years later, thousands and thousands of air travelers would be stepping out of airplanes not only on both sides of the Atlantic, but all over the world?
Passengers will be cleared through health, customs, and immigration, after which they can be met at exit gate number 4.
Dad, here I am over here.
Hello, my boy. How are you? How was the trip?
It was wonderful. Smooth as a bird. You know, it's hard to believe. We left Sydney at 7 o'clock on Friday, and here it is Monday morning, and I'm here in London with you.
3 days? And to think your mother and I took 4 weeks and 3 days when we came over on the boat. Anyway, come on. Your mother's waiting for you outside.
Yes, air travel has changed our concept of distance and of time. Instead of racing against the clock is very often racing to keep up with the airplane as it crosses the time meridians of the world. Is that pretty clear?
Yes, I understand all that. Well, I don't mean to be rude, but it's getting close to the end of my lunch hour. Could you just tell me what is the most important thing the International Civil Aviation Organization does today?
Well, let's take your line, air travel. Your company's job is to carry passengers. And what's the passenger most concerned about?
Getting there quickly and safely.
Precisely. And that's ICAO's prime concern, too. So, we've set up certain safety aids. Well, to give just one example of such aids, the Atlantic is patrolled by specially equipped weather ships, whose maintenance is contributed to in some measure by all the North Atlantic states. Would you like to hear an actual aircraft in contact with a weather ship on the route to Iceland?
I certainly would.
All right. Let me play this tape recording for you.
Weathership India from Trans-Canada 533, our position at 0040 Zulu, 6100 North, 1430 West, cruising flight level 100 on top, fuel remaining 9 hours, requesting the upper winds for 10,000. Go ahead.
Roger, 933, the 10,000 wind was 209.24 knots. Over.
Wind 2000 Zulu for 10,209 at 24 knots. Roger, thank you.
And believe me, transatlantic planes rely on those weather ships.
I'm sure they do.
The complex problems which ICAO was created to deal with range through many different phases of aviation. Let's take these weather stations, for example, and see how the network was set up. Assistant Secretary General Edward Weld recorded this story in a speech recently. Here it is now.
The common need of states operating aircraft in the North Atlantic region for detailed meteorological information, communication facilities, and other air navigation services has been met by the device of joint international financing of many of the necessary facilities. By a series of agreements, the first of which was signed in London in September 1946, the states concerned have succeeded in establishing and maintaining a network of ocean stations in the North Atlantic and numerous air navigation services in Iceland, Greenland, and the Faroes. The ocean stations network consists at present, in accordance with the latest agreement signed in Paris in February 1954, of 21 ocean ships doing tours of duty at 9 fixed points in the North Atlantic. These ships, especially equipped with intricate and expensive apparatus, in addition to performing their primary function of providing meteorological information, provide communications services and radio navigation aids and search and rescue services for ships and aircraft in distress.
Then there is air navigation, the actual flying, the movement of aircraft from one place to another by predetermined, planned, and serviced routes. The chief executive of this activity in ICAO is Air Vice Marshal Alan Ferrier, Assistant Secretary General in charge of air navigation, who incidentally was a member of the Canadian delegation to Chicago.
The past 10 years have witnessed the transition from comparatively small, short-range aircraft to the present-day airliners capable of non-stop flight for distances of over 3,000 miles at speeds approaching the subsonic and at altitudes much nearer to the stratosphere. It is evident that the economic development of air transport in all its services to mankind must broaden the base of its market, and this will inevitably result in a much more marked difference between the equipment and techniques used on the one hand for long-haul services and on the other hand for short-haul services to the masses of great populations. These differences in equipment and techniques will call for continued effort by the organization, especially for those parts of the world where international boundaries are crossed frequently, so that technological development will never be shackled by inertia or an unwarranted worship of tradition.
There could be no sound development of civil aviation in time of peace except within the rules of the law. ICAO's legal director, P.K. Roy, tells us about the air law of today.
At Chicago, a legal regime was established. It is founded upon the principle that the aircraft of any state flying into or over the territory of another state would be governed by the laws and regulations of the latter. To avoid the almost impossible conditions which would result from the great differences among the laws of the several states through which an aircraft might pass on an international flight, rules and regulations relating to flight of aircraft have been developed by the International Civil Aviation Organization during the last 10 years with very considerable success and practical effect.
Today, with aviation recognized as the golden key to many of the barriers standing in the way of economic and industrial development, many countries have been in need of an air transportation system to span centuries of progress in one leap from the ox cart to the airplane, bypassing other forms of surface transport which might prove too costly or take too long to build. Under the Technical Assistance Program, sponsored by the United Nations, ICAO missions of experts in all the different aviation specialties are sent to countries which ask for their services. Heading the ICAO Technical Assistance Program is the director, E.R. Marlin.
Civil aviation is one of the most recent manifestations of our mechanized age. Its progress in the hands of the more advanced countries has been phenomenal. It is only natural that the countries which have lagged behind in their industrial development should wish to share the benefits of this form of transport, which can link them to centers of population in any part of the world in a matter of hours, and can provide many of them, whose territory consists of deserts, mountains, and jungles, with a most valuable means of communications. Apart from the practical accomplishments, technical assistance by ICAO has had a marked psychological effect upon the peoples of the underdeveloped countries where ICAO has worked. It is an inspiration for them to see their own nationals undertaking efficiently and successfully the most skilled and exacting of tasks. If the young men of these countries can operate their own aviation services successfully, they can do the same in other fields equally or even more complex.
Well, there you are, young lady. I think I've answered your questions about what ICAO is and what the Chicago Convention was.
Thanks a lot.
Sorry I kept you so long.
Oh, I'm not a bit sorry. The next time somebody asks me what ICAO is, I think I'll have some of the answers.
The 10 years since 1944 have witnessed many developments, seen many obstacles overcome by international cooperation and know-how through the medium of the International Civil Aviation Organization. Dr. Edward Warner, a member of the U.S. delegation at Chicago, is now the president of the 21-nation permanent governing body of the organization. Dr. Warner.
The men who met in Chicago did not accomplish all that their governments had hoped for, but they accomplished a remarkable feat in planning an organization and endowing it with a constitution that has proved reasonably adequate throughout a period of such expansion as only the greatest optimists would have ventured to expect. With 30 times the amount of passenger travel and freight shipment by air that there was immediately before the war, and with vastly increased use of international arrangements affecting civil aviation, the framework constructed in 1944 still fits.
Freedom of the Skies commemorates the 10th anniversary of the signing of the Convention on International Civil Aviation. This program was written by the Public Information Office of the International Civil Aviation Organization in Montreal, Canada. The voices of the past were all dramatized. The voices of ICAO officials were authentic. The Freedom of the Skies was produced in New York by the international staff of United Nations Radio.